Sage Turner joins me now. Councilwoman Turner, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We have that set of questions that we're going to offer to all candidates. So we'll just get started with the first one, which is, would you please introduce yourself and let our let voters know why you're running for city council?
Sure. So I'm Sage Turner, currently serving my first term on city council and seeking support for re-election on November 5th. I've lived in the area about 25 years and raised my family here and have since empty nested, and city planning work is just kind of my favorite thing in the world. I have a master's in city planning and I love the work. I'm honored to do this work, so I appreciate everyone's support thus far. I have a lot of concerns for the community, and we've been making some good strides, but I feel like there's so much more work to do, which is why I'm running again. My leadership is, in this term, has predominantly been around affordable housing, and that crisis, of course, is not solved yet, so much work to be done there as well. I have three kind of top issues and areas of focus that I am both finishing this current term and focusing the next term on if elected, and that is, first, housing. As I said, I really do believe that all of the issues in our community can be tied back to some kind of housing issue. And when I talk about housing, I mean all the parts: apartments, home ownership, home preservation, accessibility, transportation, levels of affordability, voucher acceptance, all of it, all things housing. My second focal area is community safety. And that can mean different things to different people. For me, that means our public safety forces, Asheville Police Department, Asheville Fire Department, and our alternative responses like the community paramedics response, all of these alternative responses that we could also grow. But it also means climate change for me. We have a looming issue worldly, nationally, state, and locally, and I think we need to be doing more to be better prepared for what is coming. So I consider that a component of community safety as well. And then lastly, my third goal is really doing more around basic city services and infrastructure. One of our key priorities and responsibilities is to make sure that we are maintaining a healthy, safe, working, functioning, and beautiful city for both our assets, but also our residents. And I feel like we could be doing more to ensure that. I want us to be proud of our city and how it works. And I do have some basic information up. My website, actually, sageforasheville.com, is full of information, endorsements, opinions, ideas, goals, videos, et cetera. So I really encourage folks to look at the website if they can, and also to reach out. I'm very open to communication. I enjoy speaking with residents about the issues. And I will say, having run for a second time now, that's what's been most refreshing. It's been nice to get back out in the crowds of people and hear what's going on in their neighborhoods, what's going on in their minds, what are they most concerned about. So Sage Turner again, running for re-election, and glad to be here.
Thank you for that. You mentioned affordable housing, which is unquestionably one of Asheville's biggest issues. What concrete actions will you take to make housing more affordable in Asheville?
Well, there's a plethora. So right now we're looking at ways that we can create more land to build on. And that could come in the ways of changing things like flag lots and how we do zoning in large areas. We are doubling down on programs around home preservation and home repair, because it's not just that we need to create new affordability, we need to recognize that a lot of folks staying in their homes is critical to remaining affordable to them, so home preservation and protection as well. I want us to see growth in some of these kind of secondary structures, formerly known as ADUs, accessory dwelling structures. It's been a tool in the community for a long time, but not one well utilized because it's hard to access, and I want us to invest some programming around that. We, of course, need more emergency sheltering and just ready sheltering for folks that are coming in and out of homelessness or struggling to maintain ongoing housing. We see that more with our permanent supportive efforts. I also have a large initiative that I'm working through council right now, which is how to transition some of our large apartment complex projects that come to us for approval into a more prescriptive process where we can get them really synced in with our efforts around affordable units, around open space and tree protection and commercial activation on ground floors, and really create a process for them that can lead them down a scripted path that makes their approval much easier, gets us the outcomes we need, and then allows us to use our limited tools of finances, subsidies, and even our new upcoming affordable housing bonds to really focus on what matters more to residents, which is home ownership, home preservation, home protection, more ability for residents to just really become homeowners in general. And that looks like a lot of down payment assistance. It's become too expensive to live here. It's become out of reach. And we've hit this critical number of no longer being a majority of homeowners. We're now a majority of renters, and it's very alarming. I could probably speak housing policy for 4 hours on the radio today. So I will suggest that you go to my website where there are literally bullet lists of items of actions I would take.
Improving housing affordability would likely make the biggest impact on homelessness, and other improvement opportunities exist in the areas of harm reduction and mental health services. What solutions could you offer to the problems in these areas of harm reduction and mental health?
Well, we experimented with the low barrier shelter during the pandemic over at the Ramada. And I'll let you know that Ramada project is currently changing. It's likely not going to include recently unhoused folks unless you were a veteran. But we need more proactive responses for this. And to me, that looks like not necessarily a hotel in a neighborhood, more like a clinical setting, maybe down by the hospital or something, where folks that are in dire need of help can get the services they need in a really direct, compact, efficient manner that is successful in getting them back on their street. Right now, we're really struggling to utilize. We have great partners in the area, community organizations that are doing great work in their little corners of the community, but we're not really well synced up. We're not addressing all of the population needs, and we're slowly but surely getting on the same page because of our COC, the Continuum of Care effort, which is a larger board of experts we've put together to manage this situation for the community. And it's no longer just the city of Asheville, it's also the county, Dogwood Health, and experts and program managers from the actual programs. And I think with their guidance, we're going to get some really specific items that we need to tackle, and one of which will probably be a low barrier shelter with complete services on board. I expect that to come in the next year or so.
Thank you for that. Do you support the targeting of houseless people by the Asheville City Police, like the homeless camp sweeps that have happened, or the special operations which target arrests of panhandlers that we've seen over the past year?
Do I support them, as in do I encourage them to happen?
Yeah.
Sometimes, yes. You know, when you have a critical situation happening, we have some encampments of types or clusters of folks living together that became extremely dangerous, and extremely dangerous for the folks living within them as well. I'm recalling a situation in downtown where there were, I think, 25 people cohabitating in a series of tents, and I'm sorry, it was more than 25 people, but we had 25 reports of rape from that particular group. We had crime, we had death. So that setting is not safe. It's not best for folks. And I get that we're having to do this and we're seeing these incidents creep up because we don't have an alternative, which is really why I speak to that low barrier shelter and more housing, because until we have places to really help folks and put folks that need the care and can get the services they need, we're going to kind of see this activity. But anytime there is a large group of people that are in danger, endangering others, we do have to react. We do have to care about the community's overall safety and the individual in harm's way.
Thank you for that. Do you support the Business Improvement District, the BID? Why or why not? And then what do you want to see when it comes to the next decisions of the BID process, which includes the governance structure, the management, and the services that are going to be delivered?
I do support the BID. I did vote to support the BID, but I worked very hard and long on improving the proposal itself. It came to us very different than what it is, and I fought for the board to have equal rentership and ownership seats, for the board not to have tourism seats, but instead to have homeless provider seats. I fought and won for the meetings to be public, for the public to be able to listen in, find minutes, recordings, et cetera, and know what is happening within the bid, that it is not just a private entity with control to go do all of these things. I also made sure that the budgets and the tax rate, et cetera, would come back to us every year, so that if this council believes in it, but a future council does not, they have the authority and the tools to change it or stop it simply by zeroing out the tax. I will say there was some, I think there was some fear in the community of what this would mean. What would these quote unquote ambassadors be? And would they be security guards, et cetera? And I'll clear that up. The term we are using is community stewards. They will not be armed. They will not be security. They will be more like folks on the ground out there trying to connect people with the needs they need, because we are so short-staffed. We don't have just imagine social workers out on the street finding folks that need help, or finding, sometimes it will be visitors that just need to find where a restaurant is. But it's mostly about getting services into downtown, frankly, because of the absence of our previous downtown police force. We used to have a downtown unit that was specially trained in all these things, but because of the declination of staffing and shortages and the reduction in police units, we don't have that anymore. So we're kind of coming up with this alternative to get some more feet on the ground to help people in downtown. I know the bid was proposed in three areas, the River Arts, West Asheville, and downtown, but I guess the input gathered suggested that downtown and, or I'm sorry, that the River Arts and West Asheville weren't quite ready. So I suspect we'll be looking to the bid in downtown as a pilot to see if other areas need it. I do think it is a wonderful tool for more quickly reacting and responding and more nimbleness to issues. You know, I was getting calls from businesses that they were arriving to their jobs with feces at the door or not sure how to handle someone sleeping there. And that's not really fair to the businesses either. We need a proactive and dignified response for these folks to get help and for the businesses to not have to encounter that every day. And for government to react to that, like the city of Asheville was really difficult. But this business improvement district, I think, will be able to handle a daily call for something like that and be able to address it more quickly.
Thank you. Since HCA acquired Mission, the quality of care has suffered to the point that it was or is in danger of losing its contract with Medicare and Medicaid. What, if anything, can the city do about the decline of this institution, which is so critical to the well-being of our community?
Unfortunately, it doesn't feel like we can do enough. I've been supporting the nurses and their unionization. I've been supporting the kind of grassroots efforts that we see on social media to bring up situations, to air them, to air grievances, and to build coalition around the problem. But there isn't a ton that we can do, unfortunately. I don't feel like, as a city councilor, other than support the efforts, continue to air the grievances, and perhaps, you know, open our community up to new hospitals if that's the situation, if it continues to get that dire.
Preliminary data indicates that so far the Merriman Avenue Road diet, if you will, our conversion of a major sector of this key thoroughfare from four lanes to three lanes, allowing for enhanced bicycle and pedestrian access, reduced crashes, and increased bicycle traffic, with its impact on pedestrians still unclear. All of this with an average increased travel time of no more than 14 seconds. How does this information inform your view of the upcoming major Patton Avenue reconfiguration in response to the I-26 connector?
I think it's a success. You know, some of these are experiments. One of the things that we did, I'm not sure if I was a swing vote on Merriman Avenue, but I remember making sure that we could remove it if needed, if it was a fail. And I think that brought some assurances to folks who were skeptical. So here we are, and we've learned it's been a success. I am seeing input from neighbors that the nearby streets are getting busier and busier, and their children are less likely to walk to here and fro, and so because they don't feel as safe, or the cars are speeding and so on. So there's been some side effects, but overall it's such a win for the community. And I hope, you know, we have to get more people out of cars. If we truly care about the environment, we truly care about our community, and we truly care about the generations coming after us, then we have to start getting out of our cars and moving throughout the city in different ways. I approach that both through zoning, where we put housing and businesses and stuff so people don't need cars, but also in the infrastructure it takes to allow folks to get out of their cars and maneuver safely. So safer bike lanes, great. I actually reached out to DOT about Merriman Avenue and asked, could we add some of those? They're called armadillos. They're like little, I guess they're probably very sturdy little humps that you can put along the bike lane that is another protection to ensure that cars don't swerve over into the bike lane. Because it's just still maybe not safe enough, could be more safe. But I'm excited because the Patton Avenue will connect to other horizontal paths that have multimodal options. And now you'll be able to maneuver through downtown in one connected path when this is done. And that's a big win. It may seem like there are not as many bikes as we hoped, or there are not as many pedestrians as we hoped, but that will grow over time. So I'm thrilled that Merriman Avenue, excuse me, came back with some initial successes. I expect them to grow.
Wonderful. Sidewalks and improved bus services are things that residents have been calling for years. How can you help push those efforts forward?
One of the big things we're doing, it's going to be so critical that folks look all the way down the ballot to the very end, not only because I'm the last name on it, but because the bonds are at the very end too. And we are putting forth another round of bonds to get us one step closer to a complete bond cycle, which means that if you think of it like a mortgage, we take out a bond, we raise the taxes to pay the debt, but when it's done, the debt is paid off. And if we can get into a bond cycle where they're put into a calendar at just the right rate, where in the future, as they're paid off, we can reuse the money without raising the taxes, then we'll start to see progress. This is actually a very standard financing mechanism throughout cities, throughout the United States, but Asheville's specific history dating back to the Great Depression has led us to this climate where we don't take on a lot of debt in that way. We're not comfortable with it as a community yet. So these upcoming bonds are going to signal support for our second round, literally only the third bond since the 1920s, which is a pretty big statement. So within that is $20 million for transportation. What we did the first round was attack sidewalks and improvements on streets throughout the city so that everyone in the city could see an impact in their neighborhood. And we'll do more of that. We need to keep improving sidewalks and streets. We need to keep improving our infrastructure because, frankly, we're just decades behind. We're decades of deferred maintenance behind. Not our facilities, our public safety stations is another one, hence that bond this year. Until we get into a rhythm of really having money to spend on these things, we're not going to be able to make significant progress, and we will be further kind of burdening future generations because, as we see, everything only gets more expensive with time and everything continues to erode and break with time. So we've got to get these bonds across. We've got to keep taking big strides and gaining momentum in these repairs.
The legality or illegality of drugs certainly isn't in city council's purview. But if you're reelected, would you consider working to put the enforcement of marijuana prohibition at the lowest priority for Asheville's police force and allocating significant money to social services for and other efforts such as employment, subsidies, and training to reintegrate drug war victims?
It would be really interesting to look at. I hesitate to support without knowing more about it, but probably, but only if tied to decriminalization. I feel like that's maybe the more pressing issue before it. We've got folks that have been, you know, jailed or suffered long sentences and punishments for some of these activities that we would need to really ratify before we could just free it up. You know, we've seen the Harris Cherokee Center now has, I think, just unleashed this week, I think. So I'd be curious to see. I know in other cities, it's a huge tax boom. It is a little bewildering to me that North Carolina hasn't moved in this direction. I remember our governor and attorney general speaking about it just a couple years ago, about maybe it was time for North Carolina. And I hope that does happen at a state level, but it's not as simple as council just, you know, deprioritizing it. It really, there's a big lift. And the decriminalization probably needs to come first.
Gotcha. What are your thoughts on short-term rental restrictions and the flagrant violations of current regulations? And do you believe the city should act to make Airbnb accountable with regards to its refusal to provide key data that would facilitate Asheville's enforcement of its own current regulations?
Absolutely. I've had a longstanding position on short-term rentals. I do not believe they should be allowed in whole houses. We've tried to prevent that. We had to grandfather some, and there does seem to be abuse of the situation. I became proactive, and I spent 6 or 7 months talking with VRBO and Expedia and Airbnb in confidence, actually, under an NDA to discuss this, to say, really, how are we going to fix this? Because other states and cities have better tools. One in particular that would help incredibly is a simple permit field on the application. So if you want to have a short-term rental listing, you have to tell them who you are, what your address is. And if you don't tell them those things, you cannot have a listing. And I want us to have a required permit field. And then we got Airbnb and VRBO, et cetera, to understand that because they do it elsewhere. And what they would do is then in return, supply a list of these permit numbers to us. We would cross-reference them. If they weren't legitimate permit numbers, Airbnb and VRBO would then delete the listings from their platform. We were able to get them to a place of agreeing on that kind of activity, and for them it would be very simple to instate, but they had their own ask, and that ask was that we free up short-term rentals by right in our multifamily housing districts, like apartment complexes, which frankly is just nuts. So we lost that battle, and in response to losing that battle with them, I then put it to our legislative agenda and sent it up the chain to our senators and House of Representatives saying, hey, other states have this control. North Carolina needs this control. Please enact this. They didn't, but we'll put it forth again this year. I think, you know, when you zoom out, I'm like, how are we really going to solve this? The problem that we've had with short-term rentals in the recent years is that we're really one of the few cities in the state that is so heavily impacted by this. If you're in a smaller city, you don't have this problem. But I have been fighting for us to stall and stall and stall on any expansion of this. I argued against and voted against expanding to kitchens, et cetera, because I knew with time, these other cities would start to see the impacts, and it is happening. Now, Watauga County, where Boone and App State are, they're having problems. Greensboro's having problems. Charlotte's having problems. Raleigh's having problems. So now, as the momentum increases and more cities are having problems, that's how we'll see initiatives at the state level and state rules, which will enforce places like Airbnb and VRBO to enact these rules. That would be a big step. In the meantime, our staff is struggling to chase down and enforce. I will say, I did a little enforcement trial with a friend in an application and was very pleased with how aggressive they were in making sure it was a legitimate rental. So we're not enforcing it, which I think people assume. We are in fact enforcing it. We are in fact doing the best we can, but we will need greater tools to really make it work. And it's only fair that we have them.
Mm-hmm. And finally, is there anything else that you would like to let voters know that maybe we didn't discuss before we let you go?
Gosh. You know, I've been able to, I think, make some great successes in this first term, and I'm going to be publishing a list of what I'm proud to have been involved in these first 4 years. I'll be posting that in the next couple days, actually. And I think we need to really focus on the momentum we have around progress. So we're seeing gains in our public safety staffing. We're seeing gains in housing. Just last week, we learned for the first time in 6 years, we're going to see a decrease in rental rates for 2025. So our activity around building housing and targeting affordable housing is working. It's paying off. Rents are going to come down 10% next year, and that's a big win. But there's just so much more to do. And I just encourage folks to go online, check it out, give me a call, drop me an email, and talk to me about the situations you're dealing with. Talk to me about the problems you're encountering in the community, because if we don't know about them, we can't fix them. And I have a great track record of getting things done. So hopefully I will see your support in November 5th and sageforasheville.com for more information.
Thank you so much.